Well, good afternoon. This is Rob Knapp. Can you hear me clearly?
Rob, we can. It's appreciate your time today. My name is Rob Reich. I'm here. I'll just go around the table clockwise. Claudia Glover is here with us. Tara Barton is here.
Hello.
Marina, say your last name. I always butcher it.
Chicani
is here. And the easy one, Sean Michael Fitzpatrick.
All right. Well, welcome. Welcome. I got your homework, and I appreciate the effort and the candor. What we're going to try to do today is cover everything that you cover in the first, really, the first 2 days. And the reason is because it's an introduction plus the first chapter in the first first week. So bear with us. We'll run along quickly. But before I do that, Rob, I love your name, and congratulations for the courage of you and your team to want to improve and change. And we would like to kind of hear from you guys as to, at the heart of it, what is what's driving you towards this change, and what would you like to see at the end of it?
So, Rob, I'll start since I'm the oldest one in the room and primarily responsible for any of the ills that we're about to discuss. Sean and I began working together back in 2000. I was at Bank of America at the time, doing about $1 million a year, and in the old days, our business was an acquisition model. By the time Sean and I decided it was time to leave Bank America because we wanted to reinvent ourselves in 2008, we had 900 households and over 2,000 accounts, pretty close to $1 billion in assets. We were at about 2 million and had been stuck at 2 million since 3, 4, 5 years in a row. We couldn't crack it. So we came over to Wells Fargo, committed to rebuild the practice, to go from a low-touch, high-volume to a high-touch, low-volume practice, and we only identified 40 clients that we wanted to bring over. And obviously, our timing couldn't have been better because we came over June 13, 2008. So we all know what happened in those ensuing periods. The good news is we got about 38 of the clients to come over with us, and it took us much, much longer to rebuild the practice than we had anticipated. We had anticipated it would take us 18 to 24 months. In fact, it took us 4 years to get back to 1.7 million. The four-year mark is important because 4 years ago, the firm introduced a growth award. And the growth award basically said as follows. If you grow your business 15% per year, we will set aside a award of a corresponding amount of your gross revenues that will be paid to you in a lump sum at the end of the period. So the first year you earned 15%, the second year you earned 30%, these are all cumulative, by the way, and you had to hit them consecutively because if you ever failed to hit them consecutively, you went back to zero. The third year you earned 45%, the last year you earned 60%. So our business was organically growing and doing very well in the first 2 years. But when we started to see the size of the award that was on the horizon, very frankly, the last 2 years we really focused much more to growing revenues and falling back kind of into old habits of taking on accounts and things that we shouldn't necessarily take on. And so we were able to double the business. So from 2011, we finished at 174. 2015, we finished at, call it, 4 million. So by all outward appearances, the business was doing great. The dirty little secret that we knew is referrals had stopped coming. We were getting more complaints from clients, not regulatory complaints, but service complaints. And Sean and I walked out of here every day with less and less of a sense that we had done the job the way we really felt like we ought to be doing it. But we rationalized to ourselves that the pot at the end of the rainbow was worth whatever near-term sacrifices we were making. And we created a fairly chaotic environment in which everybody had to live for the last 18 months. After we hit the growth award and it was all done, Sean and I took a break, a little bit of a mental break. I actually left town for 10 days and went to California with my wife. She reminded me I hadn't been out of the office in 10 days in probably 15 years. And I started to think about, where are we? Where do we want to go? Do we want to continue on this path? And my goal has always been to have about $1 billion in AUM. My real goal would be to have a $10 million practice. And in the same way that we knew when we were at Bank of America that what had gotten us to $2 million could never get us to $5 million, I now know that what we did to get to $4 million will never get us to $10 million. So we dropped back, and I probably did things a little bit backwards. Richard Wildman is a guy that I've known for a number of years. I like Richard. I've done things with him on and off. And so I reached out to him to ask him for some help. And you know Richard well enough to know how candid Richard is. And if you knew the kind of relationship Richard and I have, you would know he's way candid with me, which actually made everybody here on the team happy. But what I walked away with as we went further and further into it with Richard is I said, what we really have here is a structure systems issue. That's our primary issue. And that's what really needs to be addressed the most. I am the biggest offender. I like to do what I like to do when I want to do it. I like to chase deals. I get bored with routines. I'm like managing a 12-year-old at times. And we've all said, you know, I've changed plenty before. We changed a lot in the last iteration. We're going to have to all change in this iteration. And then the final thing that I will tell you is that most of the growth for most of my career, I did it with stress, anger, fear, you know, buy another house that I couldn't really afford, have to show up, tell Sean, look, we've got to do this, we've got to do that, or set out these ridiculous goals, and then everybody knew that I was going to be a maniac if we didn't hit the goals. And that's been a really kind of a negative way for me to live my life at work, but that negative energy came at a really high cost. One of my buddies said, you know, Rob, you can run a car on rocket fuel, but you just can't run it very long on rocket fuel. And so everybody sitting around the table here is 20 years younger than me. Two of them, three of them have young children that, you know, I don't have any children. So, you know, long term, my vision of what it means to work hard isn't sustainable. And the young lady here who doesn't have any children, I suspect that at some point she's going to want to get married and have a life beyond just sitting in here in the office with me. When Sean first came to work for me, he was single, and so sitting in the office for 15 hours a day was fine as long as I cut him loose to go to Vegas for 48 hours every once in a while. But all of a sudden he gets married, now he's got a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old that he seems more interested in than me, and I'm still coping with that. I'm not quite sure how to deal with that, but that is kind of a fast overview of my assessment of where I am, how I got here. I want to be able to walk out of here more days than not feeling like we did our job as well as we know how to do it, and I don't feel that way.
How is this year going?
Terrible.
Okay, so what defined terrible?
We're off by about 30%.
Oh, okay.
And here's what I will tell you. The firm will say it's because they handed Sean and I a huge check. What I will tell you is, and you know this better than anybody probably in the room, you pay for your sins in this business 6, 9, 12 months after you committed them.
Oh, yeah.
We're paying for the sins that we committed over the last 9 months of last year. And very frankly, Sean and Claudia and Tara said, Rob, I know you hate this. And I know it's going to kill you, but we have to stop long enough to put this thing back together the right way before you completely blow it up. The check engine light's been on for 100 miles. Now the oil light's on. I know you don't want to pull over to the side of the road and have the car serviced and take time to reinvent the service model, reconnect, figure out what we've done wrong and how to fix it, but we have to do it. So I really committed to the first 6 months, us trying to get those things put into place.
All right. Let me hear from Sean, if I could.
So, Rob, I would not say it's terrible. This is a practice that, standing on its head, should do roughly $3.2 million in production, which you know, by any measurement, I think across this industry is still a pretty good year. If you put that against comparisons of clearly where we were the last couple of years, the adjective that Rob used to describe the practice could certainly be thrown around. To look at where the practice is right now, you know, we have all come to the agreement, you know, to reiterate what Rob said, that the service model needs to be taken up to a much higher level. We have already, as Rob said, started to work with Wyoming, and we've already instituted the 12-4-2 service model, which candidly I think is actually it's going well. I think it's been very well received by clients. And I think we're already starting to see the fruits of that labor. Clients are now, you know, expecting to have those conversations with us once a month at least for the reviews. And we're starting to see some assets trickle in. We've already received a couple of client referrals from that. In fact, some of the clients have even referred some of their family members to us. So I do think that the stick with the carrot that the practice has been, you know, accustomed to over the last 10 or 15 years of an instant gratification will have to be transitioned to more of a longer-term cycle. But the beginning stages of what we've done the last couple of months, I think, has moved the practice onto the right path. After watching a couple of the videos online here in the last couple of days and looking at the, you know, 100 client per FA model, I would say we're probably already ahead of that curve. Right now, the 12-4-2 model, and Claudia or Tara can give you the exact number, but I would say that that's closer to 70. I mean,
that's not there. Counting the ones that are really, I'd say probably 70.
Not the ones named Fitzpatrick.
Right, right. Around 70, between 70 and 80.
So in that model, it's about 70 or 80 between Rob and I. So it's certainly a much more, it's a manageable number, and a number from what I feel that once this is fully implemented and instituted, that we have some capacity to grow the practice.
Okay, good. How are you guys set right now for understanding the value of keeping that closet clean once you get it cleaned up? Meaning establishing minimums so that you don't make the mistakes of cluttering the place up. Are you there now? Have you set minimums, or are you how do you do on that?
So, Rob, this is Rob again. I would say we're vacillating a bit, and here's what I mean by that, is that we have stuck to our minimums pretty well. We had always said we thought we would max out at about 100 to 120 clients. Two things have changed that. One is when you started to talk about per FTE, that started to make me think, you know, we could probably handle more along the line of 200. Number two, we've just been approved to operate under discretion. So being able to move to discretionary models, I think, should create some efficiencies around the investment management process. And I will tell you, in 2014, we brought in $90 million plus. And I think we stuck to that model pretty strictly. I think we pretty much stuck to about a $2.5 to a $3 million minimum. In 2014, I think we brought in $45 million. Mm-hmm. 2015, I'm sorry. In 2015, we brought in about $45 million. I would say there I started to fudge on the $2 million because I would look at it and say, okay, you know, given our allocation strategy around how we do equities, fixed income, annuities, and alternatives, $1.5 million is still X dollars in revenue. It still puts me, instead of being at 14.7% on the growth award, it puts me at 15.3%. So we got away from that a bit, but I would say we got away from it in the magnitude of 10 people. Not a huge change. I think going forward, we are committed to having the right minimums in place. We do get just a little bit of heat, so we're in a somewhat unique situation here because we're part of the private bank. We do get called on from time to time to say, hey, I know that Sean Fitzpatrick doesn't meet the minimums, but he's a really important client. He's got $2 million bucks. We need you guys to take care of him. So there's always going to be a bit of that. But I know that you said, I think you said, you know, as long as that's less than 20%, the butlers are less than 20% or so. I don't see us ever running into that kind of dynamic.
Yeah. Well, what, you know, Richard knows Supernova. So what would you think, why me? I mean, I appreciate the referral, but we're kind of competitors, so it's kind of interesting that he would refer you to me. What?
He didn't refer me to, he did not refer us to you, Rob. I had read your book, so as soon as he said 1242, I knew what he was talking about. But Richard's entire description of Supernova took less than 5 minutes, and he said, it's so simple, you dumbasses. Call everybody once a month. Do it the first 5 days of the month. Send them a folder or a notebook. Tell them to keep a note in it. Tell them you're going to come see them 4 times a year.
Yeah.
That is not enough systematic, detailed, definable thing for us. I am a great salesman. And I will sell you a million. You leave me that much room to drive a Mack truck through, I'll tell you 1,000 ways that I don't have to do it. I look at it, and I told Claudia this, and this is a conversation Cindy and I have. It is like if I said to you, you know, I think that the key to winning this war is taking that hill over there, Rob. So you guys go get that hill. Now, if I were you, you know, I'd start and soften them up with a little bit of artillery. Then I'd probably send some guys up along the side, and that's what you should do. Go at it and let me know how it turns out. I think Richard's genius and his greatness is in developing unique value propositions. We're also working with marketing firms to try to establish our brand, to figure out how we create this brand, how we do some of those things, thinking about how do we look at these niche markets and then make ourselves famous in those marketplaces. So my theory and my observation, having known Richard for the years that I have, I think he's really expert at that. But I will tell you, I think Sean's doing a better job with the 1242 than I am. I don't think – I know he is. And I am completely uncomfortable just lobbying in calls to people willy-nilly and then, you know, saying, oh, well, if I left a message, that counts, and not having an agenda to say it's just a touch-base call. And I finally tracked down a woman who's the CFO of a Fortune 200 company, and I said, well, I just wanted to tell you the market's done this and that. And I know she's thinking, no kidding, jerk, I, you know – I'm a CFO, and I just wanted to touch base. And she's like, seriously? You called me to touch base? So we need the system that you have and the way that you guys put the structure, the detail, the systems and strategies around it, the spreadsheets, the macros, and all that stuff. We have zero of that. I learned more watching these two videos about what we should be doing than – We need you, trust me.
Okay, good, good. Any other references or people that you know that have done it or experienced while you were at Bank America or anything like that that would have influenced you?
Not that I know, Claudia, does Richard? No, not at all, Rob. I mean, I will tell you, I mean, I read your book and I anecdoted the hell out of it and I said, this is the greatest idea. We've really got to do this. And then I came in and said, hey, guys, we said we're going to do 325 this month. We're at 315. Where the hell is the last 10,000 coming from? And the book went back on my shelf.
Yeah, right. No, that's, you know, that's why I hire a coach, because I just wrote about that this week. You know, why do people fail in their goal setting? And it's because, you know, it's easy. It's easy to do what you always do. And any time you have to change or change your behavior, it's you need a coach. You don't always.
I need a lot of behavioral modification.
Yeah. I mean, most people, you know, some people can't afford a coach, and that's understandable. But if you can, you should hire one, no matter what you're trying to change. So, anyway, well, welcome and good. Sound motivated, focused, achievement, goal-oriented. So those are all the things that I need in terms of helping people, and you've already got an acquisition strategy in place, so everything I can add to that is going to be gold for you because you're going to use it versus some people that don't. So wonderful. The first things we have to do is make sure we don't let anybody else in. We're going to guard the fort very strictly because we have to clean it up. Now, you don't have a huge cleanup job, but we're going to go through it anyway because we want to have plan, process, and rituals throughout everything that we do. You might remember I was a Navy pilot, and with that comes attention to detail, checklist, plan, process, and rituals for the simple reason you stay alive, and it allows you to focus then on what matters most, which is doing your job rather than focusing on what am I going to do today. So everything is designed to help you, the pilots, get in your cockpit and fly your planes and do it right and get back safely. So that's what we do. So first thing we have to do is make sure we don't let anybody in during this transition because it's going to take some time and effort. Now, you understand the efficiency of this coaching process is improved dramatically because of the videos. And as watch the videos as many times as it takes for you to get it completely into your head. I once took a course called Dynamics of Creative Selling and Creative Leadership from Success Motivation Institute in Waco, Texas, and they taught me that listening to their tape once a day for 5 days was the way to get it into my head. I did it, and it worked. I memorized it, and I recommend that. If you can watch it, the video at least twice a week, it's going to be better than once, and three times is better than once. So the more times you can watch it, the more you're going to get out of it, and the nuances are going to hit you. And also, if you haven't, you can listen to the book in the car as we go along, which will also stimulate your thinking, even if you've read it and think you get it. The second time through or the third time through, you're going to get more and more. There's a lot of subtle things that come out of this that are very important. The very first thing that we have to do is establish our minimum and our maximum number of clients and the minimum account size. Now, human psychology comes into this, and we recognize that somewhere along the line and determine that we'll take that into account. And so we're going to have an absolute minimum and then a target minimum. So these are for you to decide. People say, well, Rob, you only say we can only have 100 clients. I never said that. I said based on an 8-hour workday and the amount of clients that you have determines, how long you're going to have to spend with clients and working. So if you want to work nights and weekends, God bless you, you can have more than 100. But my recommendation would be, frankly, to have no more than the clients that you have right now. In fact, I'd probably suggest that you eliminate some of them. So where do they go? What do you do when you have big clients that you need to reassign? We built something we call the stair step to the stars. So hopefully you're not the only private banking group there or in the area. And we should probably establish as high a minimum as we can. And so we're then reassigning to teams that have less of a minimum. And therefore, by the very nature of doing that, we establish ourselves as the top team in the community. So that's up to you how you want to play that. There's a psychology that goes along there. By having the highest minimum, you establish a level of prestige that is above the others. But again, that's up to you. There is a value in it. I just point that out. So the absolute minimum might be, it actually should be a mathematical computation. So I'll have you do that. And the reason, I mean, how did we come up with that? Well, we just did the math. I mean, we just said, okay, give me your average, give me your total number of clients, give me your business, and divide it, and give me your average. So we don't want to bring in clients that are less than our average. And then who do we want? Well, we don't want our average, right? We want people that look like the top 20% of our clients that give us 80% of our business. So that becomes our target. Becomes our target minimum. So let's say theoretically your absolute minimum is 3 million. Your target minimum might be 7.5 million. And you guys, again, need to do your homework and tell me what that is. Have you done that already, or is that something you need to take a pencil to?
No, I think we look at these numbers obsessively, so I think Claudia and Sean can walk you through those numbers pretty easily.
Okay.
Can't you?
We'll get that. Okay. You can give
me
an hour, or we can wait.
Rob, let me ask you a question on this, just as we're doing that math. We have three large institutions. So if our book is about $500 million, there's three clients that constitute $125 million of that. Should those be excluded from the calculation?
I would. Institutional clients, unless they're really individuals posing as institutions.
No, these are endowments and pension plans.
Yeah, if they're real institutions, then I would, that are, frankly, institutions, they're subject to a different kind of servicing model in some cases and a different kind of service model. I mean, a different kind of everything. You know, you need to try, they want all kinds of different things from you.
Exactly.
Are they, so that, it's like 401k business. I treat it differently. But let's just take the private client, individual human beings and look at that. How does that look? Or do you want to wait till next call? It's up to you guys.
I think we should do it for next call.
We'll dive into that.
All right. Now, here's the thing on the maximum number of clients. Don't think about the maximum number of clients that you're going to service as a ceiling. Think of it as an opportunity. The smaller your client base, the more time you have for acquisition. The larger your client base, the closer you get to 100, the closer you come to being fully occupied with much less time for acquisition. Especially if you're doing full service financial planning updating, etc. So we have come to believe that the number really isn't 100 anymore. It's really closer to 70 per financial advisor. And you know who determined that? The same people that determined 100 was a good number. You guys. Yeah, it wasn't me. I mean, I said 200, and they said, no, 200 is too many. I can't grow at all. And I said, okay, 100. And they came back and said, no, 100 is too many. 70 is the number. And if you look at people that are really doing Supernova, they've got 70 clients. Now, that doesn't mean they can't keep doubling their business every 5 years or every 3 years. They can, but they still have 70 clients. It's just a different, gradually a different 70 clients. And you need that, what we call stair step to the stars, which is the other teams that you assign the clients to that you're comfortable and take over those responsibilities and give them the same level of service that you do. And that's delegation. You know, we call it radical delegation. You really have to radically delegate every single thing you can as a team to each other so that you're spending all your time doing the things that are most critical to your role on the team and doing nothing else. We used to call it Operation Pushdown, where you're trying to push to someone else, anyone else, the work that you didn't absolutely have to do. And that frees you up to do the work that you're supposed to do. So all Supernova in the end becomes a productivity-enhancing tool that if you spend your time, Rob, talking, you should be spending your time talking to clients or talking to prospects in some kind of a closing mode. So it becomes, you know, the more productive you can be, the faster the team will grow. So we're going to try and have other people do everything else and you focusing on the things that you do best. You know, and I assume that's those two things. And so, you know, the maximum number of clients has there's two phases to that. It's the absolute and then the target. So the absolute number, I cannot have any more than this, is a number. Let's say it's 100, and my target is 70. You know, and at this time, I have 50. Well, let's try and keep it at 50. Because 50 means 2.5 calls a day instead of 5. So 2.5 sounds better than 5 in terms of work, therefore giving you more time to prospect and have a life and bring balance to your life. So those are these are the heart-to-heart, sit-down, serious conversation, knowing that each client takes somewhere between the minimum 6.5 hours to 20 hours of time. So you don't want to have anybody in there that isn't paying you and isn't, you're not servicing. The other thing is we really believe that this is all about servant leadership and giving. And if you're not servicing a client and you're not giving them 12-4-2, then you certainly shouldn't be charging them what you're charging a regular client. And the question is, do they affect your brand? You know, most people want to charge clients more that they're servicing less. And you know, in the world of when you're creating goodwill and you're all about brand and reputation, think about charging the guy with a small BMW or Mercedes more per hour than you're charging the guy with the big one. It's just wrong, okay? So we're going to do the right thing consistently over time. And the people that that affects are you and your team. So we want to create a multiplier effect among our team where everybody on the team feels great about the ethics of the team, the culture of the team, and multiplies the goodwill of the team to everyone else. So from now on, what we want to start thinking about is what can we do to help? What can we do in each one of our calls to help our clients? What can we do in each of our prospecting calls to help the prospect? When we're meeting with a center of influence, it's not about getting an introduction. It's about giving an introduction. It's about giving help and giving support and creating value. So I think Richard and I are on the same page on that, but if you read the book, I think it's Elizabeth Wiseman wrote a book called The Multiplier. You might grab that and read it. And there's also a book called, you always hear about the go-getter. This book is called The Go-Giver. And it talks about the people that are truly successful, really big-time successful in life, are the people that are the big givers. And everybody likes them, and everybody trusts them, and everybody wants to help them. The rule of reciprocity says, you know, that when I do something of goodwill towards someone, they will do it in back. You know, and some people say, well, that doesn't always work. Well, of course it doesn't always work. But if something works 90% of the time, then it's probably a pretty good strategy. So that's the whole basis of Supernova. We give in order to give, and we get in return. And we do it consistently over time. Trust is built by consistently doing what you say you're going to do over time and by bringing true value to the client. That CFO has got a big job, and it's a hard job. And you need the time to understand and develop the relationship so that when you call, she's excited to hear from you and wants your opinion on something that she's concerned about in her life. And that's when you've hit it. That's when you've met. That's when you've reached your goal. When they want your opinion on something to do with their business. So that's a big challenge, and that takes time, and it takes a lot of work, and it takes an evolution of the practice. But we are consultants, right? And the question is, will we be consultants for their life or just for their practice, just for their business, just for the investments? Well, that's the least of their worries. We'd like to be consultants in their life. And, again, that takes some work and some time, but it will come, and you will be gratified over time that people will want your opinion, and your opinion will be worth something because you'll have been given the opportunity to be asked so many times on so many other issues. The greatest thing about our job is that we have the opportunity to go through life with people and watch them make good decisions and poor decisions. And therefore, when they're coming to a crisis in their life, we can really be of help because we've seen people, again, make different kinds of decisions. We know which ones are the good ones and which ones fail. So we live through other people many lives, and so you say, well, if I could do it over again. Well, in your case, you have the ability to do it over again, as clients come through and they live their lives and you get a chance to help them and coach them. Hence, I like my job because, you know, I've coached literally thousands of financial advisors through this transition and other transitions in their lives, so I can have that same kind of opportunity. So we'll cover a lot more than just what's in the book and what's in the workbook. But if you can be great students, you know, be on time, show courtesy, attend all of the sessions. I will keep you on time and make it as packed full of things that you need to hear. The ideal way that this should go is that you watch the video, do the homework, email the homework to me. I then have time to think about it. You then get on, and we have questions and answers, okay? If I have to teach the material, then you're kind of listening, but you're not fully engaged. So the more you can be prepared, having watched the video, done your homework, gotten it in, I get a chance to turn it around. I don't need much time. Just give me a day, and then I can turn it around and coach you through it and answer your questions. And then So I suggest that you meet at least 15 minutes ahead of time, go through the homework that everybody's been assigned, and then meet for 15 minutes after the call and make sure everybody understands their assignments going forward. Does that sound rational?
It does, yes.
Everybody on board? Rob, is that good?
Yep. Makes very good sense.
Okay. We will fill in all the gaps. It's frustrating in the beginning because you want all the questions answered, but it sounds like you've done a lot of homework and you've already gotten started building folders and understanding the process. So that kind of gets rid of some of the frustration of wanting it all covered in the first week. But this first call goes a little bit longer because there's so much to cover. But really the homework is to establish your min and max and make sure everybody on the team's on board. If there's anybody on the team that's not on board, do your very best to convince them, because that makes a huge difference in terms of this process working. Everybody is engaged in this. There's nobody. People ask me, should my team be on the call? I said, absolutely. Every single member of the team is fully engaged in this process because everyone's taking on new responsibilities and assuming new challenges, and they are going to need coaching along with you as the advisor. So it sounds like we're going to do great. You guys are enormously successful already. You're in the perfect position to take advantage of Supernova, and, you know, it's the new Supernova. It's evolved and changed and is, I think you'll find, is kind of exciting. We're stuck with the folders and some of the old process in terms of we just think that mechanically it works the best, even though we have computers and everything else. The folders still seem to have a magic of their own and work well, and people like them, and so we continue with them. But, you know, we've got little tiny nuances that we've developed over time that have made the whole process work smoother, better, more efficiently, et cetera. So I think you'll like those things. And I completely agree on the, you know, every call should have a purpose. Your clients don't want to waste time. You want to create value. You never picked up the phone before just to chat. So we're not going to do it now either. Every call is going to have a purpose, have an agenda, and have an executive summary so that we end up with a feeling of real satisfaction that we've taken you made good use of our time, and the client has too. So that's evolved. You know, it used to be just call and check in. That's not what we do anymore. Any questions before we close?
Yeah, Rob, this is Claudia. I was going to ask, just I know that as we're transitioning towards this new Supernova, what do we do with the monthly calls right now, which I guess we're scheduled to be working on the next week? Do you suggest we continue to do them the way we've been doing them? Because clients are expecting calls, or
You know, you guys have got it. If you're doing 12-4-2 and you've got, you know, we'll give you the scheduler, which might make life a little easier for you. We'll help you, you know, focus on the agenda and the folders and what's in them and all the details of it, but no, you're fine. You know, just use common sense working with the clients now, and we'll try and make it fill in some of the blanks that you've had in the past. But no, keep making your calls. Trust me, the hardest part for me is to get people to start making their calls, telling people the story that they're going to be, you know, there's going to be a service change here, a service upgrade, and it's like pulling teeth for most teams to get them to finally pull the trigger on that. So if you're already on board, now we'll just fill in the blanks. This will go really well, be very fast.
Great. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. What else?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. Look forward. I'll talk to you next week. And if you want to read ahead in the workbook, go ahead. You know, everything is legal here. You know, we're fine. You can jump ahead and anything else. If you want to move faster, we can move as fast as you guys are prepared to move.
And will new videos be sent to us every week, Rob?
Yeah, every week you'll get a new video. You can go on the website. You have access to the website, so you can go ahead and look at videos ahead of time.
Okay.
Go a couple weeks in advance if you want, just like with the workbook. So that's up to you. We will send them to you every week, but you do get access to all the videos as part of your coaching program.
Great.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Well,
all right.
Appreciate your help, Rob. We're looking forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, me too. I'm very, very excited. Thanks.
Bye now.